Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. We're continuing our series of election programs, and today my guest is Al Sterpy. He's running as a Democrat for the State Assembly seat in the new 127th District, formerly the 121st District. He's also on the Working Families party line. The district runs in an arc around the east side of Syracuse, encompassing the towns of Clay, Cicero, Manlius, Pompey, Fabius, and Tully. Al held the seat for two terms following the 2006 election, but lost to Republican Don Miller in 2010. He's challenging Miller for the seat in a rematch. Al is currently in business development for Tag Home Performance. Prior to that, he was the executive director of Synapse Sustainability Trust, an environmental nonprofit firm. In the interest of transparency, I should also note that Al is on the board of directors of the Onondaga Citizens League, as am I. I joined in 2008, and Al joined this year. Later this month, I will also have Don Miller as a guest on the program. Al, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Grant.
The last time you ran, you lost a very close race to Don Miller. The difference was just 972 votes. But the spending in the race was lopsided in your favor by a 4-to-1 margin. Many observers were surprised by the outcome. Did you get anything wrong in that last election?
Well, I don't know about got anything wrong. I think it was more the attitude of the voters. I mean, it was a very difficult time, just gone through the biggest recession since the Great Depression, and people were frustrated, angry, confused, and they wanted somebody to blame. And in my district, if you can't get the, the not enrolled in any party and some of the Republicans to go along with you, you're going to have a very tough time. So I think it just was the atmosphere in general. And to be honest with you, Mr. Miller didn't show up at many of the forums or debates or anything, and so nobody really knew anything, and he just had a constant drip of big mailers every other day, sort of plugging into the frustration that everybody had.
And are you doing anything different in this election on the basis of the experience of the previous one?
Well, the only thing that we're going to do different, A, he has a record to run on, and I think that's going to be very interesting for people to hear. And B, we're going to focus a little bit more on women. And I think that, in general, there'll be a greater turnout, and I think that will help us out quite a bit.
Is there anything significant about you or your issue positions that have changed since 2010?
Not really. Not that I can think of. We're still focused on economic development, and that's the key issue. Was the key issue when I was in there before. We were there during times of great chaos and turmoil, and even through all that, we were able to go ahead and do things that helped the Central New York community, that helped businesses create jobs, and I just want to get back in there and do a lot of that again.
I want to come back to some of the substance of those issues in a few minutes, but let me stick with this for a second. In 2010, the Post Standard in that election endorsed Don Miller, and after describing you as, this is their word, avuncular, said that you had little to show for your time in Albany. So I wanted to know, too, if you're elected, do you think you'll take a more aggressive approach to representation this time around than you did before?
Well, I think they weren't looking at certain things because I'm not embarrassed in my record at all. I brought lots of resources back to this community. I passed legislation such as the legislation for inland waterways that allowed Onondaga Creek to get all sorts of grants and create the Creek Walk. We did a lot of things while I was in office. We had $8 million for the airport park revitalization, $28 million for a nanotech center at Electronics Parkway, helped OCC, when they were left off the list, get about $70 million worth of capital improvements. Upstate Medical had been left off on the 2008 capital plan for half of their requests. We got those put back in. There's a lot of cranes in the air right now because of the things that I was able to help with to produce. So I'm not real sure what the paper was looking at. They had mentioned a laser focus he had on cutting taxes, but the taxes he wanted to cut were the capital gains tax, the inheritance tax, and all business taxes. So I don't know if that's a realistic approach to government or not, but that's what they were looking at then.
The things that you listed there strike me as all being in the category of money being funneled through the state back into the local area for certain kinds of economic development projects. And my sense was that that was not the atmosphere to be making that case, that, you know, that there was a bigger discussion going on about the size of state government, where state government was financially in terms of its sustainability and all of that. So I wanted to see if you could reflect a little bit on that, thinking about that race and now this one. Is that going to be a message that's going to resonate more this time?
Well, first of all that capital was approved in the 2008 budget, and that was before the financial collapse. So there wasn't really that discussion going on at that point when we did it. As far as whether or not that's something we need able to talk about in this election, because you think that, you know, the attitudes of people have changed, no matter what you do, there is money that's out there for economic development. The thing is, you have to get that money and put it into central New York. And if you're not active, if you don't build relationships with other legislators and the governor's office, you don't get that money. And that's really the job of a legislator. I mean, he's not just passing bills. He's in there fighting for his constituency and his district. And I, you know, I go beyond my district most of the time because I think of central New York as a whole as my area. And I work very well with the rest of the delegation.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Al Sturpe. He's challenging Don Miller in the race for New York's new 127th District Assembly seat, a position he had held from 2007 to 2011. It's tough, I think, as we both know, to be effective in that chamber without some seniority, because the Democratic Party majority is so big, among other things. So how do you do that in a chamber that's that big? And then also coming in, you'll be coming in kind of starting over in a way. How will you be effective and get your voice heard and this area's voice heard?
It's all about relationships, and you have to establish relationships with other senior members in the conference. And you have to have a constant rapport with them so they know what's really important to you. They're generally the chairs of all the committees, and you need to make sure that your issues get moved up on the ladder. It really is about working with people, sometimes compromising on certain things. You know, the worst thing you can do when you go into a legislative position is take a rigid position that all these things are bad and, you know, I'm going to vote against everything. And that way you basically get nothing done. So the people who sent you there have basically wasted their money.
Do you have specific issues? You mentioned economic development. Are there things that are more specific that will be on a list of priorities for you if you're elected when you go into the chamber?
Well, outside of economic development, we have a couple of projects that we've been working on for a long time regarding exporting from Central New York, which has been ended up being one of Center State CEO's big priorities, too. Other than that, you know, education. I think we need to be very careful of how we fund education at what level, because I think, you know, the last few years have been very difficult for school districts. And when I went around trying to make a decision whether I should run or not, I talked to a lot of the school superintendents, and they told me, you know, they've been able to survive, but we've cut a lot. Class sizes are bigger. You know, it's going to be more difficult. But they just don't want to go backwards anymore. They want to move forward. And I think education, especially one area that I'm very familiar with, it's pre-K special ed. They had not gotten an increase in their reimbursement rates for 4 or 5 years, which meant their staff kept dwindling. All the public programs in Central New York have evaporated except for one, the Main Street School in North Syracuse, and that's a great program. But what we've been trying to talk, and I'm on the board of Friends of Main Street, I've gone to the governor's office and we've talked to people there about how much better an investment it is to add 2 or 3% more to special ed pre-K, because if you can solve problems with kids with special problems when they're 3 and 4, you can keep them on a regular track instead of putting them in special ed. And that's 13 years of extremely expensive, schooling. So we're trying to make sure that they understand there are programs that really work and are great investments.
Well, I did want to ask you one question about your employment following your defeat in 2010 at Synapse Sustainability Trust. You were hired by Vita DeMarchi, who at that time was chair of the Onondaga County Democratic Party, and she was involved, and by association, you were involved in some controversy over this relationship, and she was also involved in some controversy involving the party renting space from her company. Is there anything that you'd want to tell me that would reassure voters that all of that was appropriate and not for our concern?
Well, Vita had been talking to me for quite a while prior to the campaign, that election, and we had been talking about ways to work together. I had just been notified that I was receiving the award, the first ever Empire State College Sustainability Award, because of some of my activities with farming, local foods and a few of the other farmland trust issues and things like that. And they had been looking for somebody to head up their not-for-profit. Her and her partner Chris had been sort of doing it on their own. So when I ended up losing the election, that was kind of a natural thing since we've been talking about it for months. And I said, okay, we'll go ahead and see how this works out. As far as all the other stuff, I have no idea. I mean, I'm not involved in their business. All I did was sit in a small office. I didn't have any ownership in anything. I wasn't involved in the building that they owned or who leased it or anything like that. And so I think you can feel okay about all that.
And in an April story in the Post Standard about your plans to run for this seat, you suggested that the incumbent, Don Miller, was not attending to a key part of his job, we haven't talked about yet, constituency service. And you used the word in that story, you used the word void to describe that aspect of his representation. So could you say a bit more about that impression and your basis for having it?
Well, people had told me over and over again that they had gone over or tried to call the office and there would be nobody there. I think Mr. Miller said it himself in the article that his constituent service was lowering taxes, so he didn't feel that he really had to do all the other stuff. And believe you me, during times of economic stress, there's lots of calls to the office, people having problems with housing, having problems getting food. I had seniors who had been kind of scammed by cable companies. They'd offered certain offers, and then when they signed up, they flipped them to some more expensive stuff, and we had to call the presidents of the companies and get that straight. I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of issues that come up helping businesses that are trying to start up, getting their licenses and things like that. So if he thinks that that's really not an issue, I think he might find out after this election that it was an issue. And I think our office did a tremendous job, and we have a lot of people who can attest to that.
And thinking now again back about issue positions, overall issue positions on policy, what are the most important differences between the two of you?
Well, first of all, after Governor Cuomo's first budget that closed a $10 billion deficit without raising taxes, he got on the air and said it's just another typical Albany budget by another typical Albany politician, and he's really disappointed in the lack of leadership that Governor Cuomo had. I don't know where he comes up with that, but I know that he's voted against all economic development bills. All the things that are actually helping the region, he votes against that. I mean, that's one big thing. Another thing comes around women's issues. I mean, he votes against everything like equal pay, minimum wage. I'm sure he's against choice. I'm sure he's, all those issues, but then says he's really supports women. I mean, you can't tell women that I don't care about all these things, but I really support you. I mean, women don't need Don Miller or anybody else to make decisions for them. They're very capable of doing them themselves.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and I'm speaking with Al Sterpy, a candidate for the 127th District State Assembly seat. More specifically on the issues, I also wanted to ask you about hydrofracking. It's just a very, very controversial issue, and it seems to be with us, and it's going to stay with us, I think, for a while. There are two questions here. First, at the most concrete level, let's say your town was voting on this. Would you be in favor of having it go forward or not?
In my town, probably not. I mean, I'm very aware of the issue. We had lots of meetings with the DEC that, people were brought into our conference. We talked about it. I talked about it in smaller groups. Here's my take on the whole thing. While I think New York State would be much more diligent in their oversight of the process, there are things that are inherently continued problems with it. And it's a lot like the nuclear industry. It has some great aspects to it, but we have no long-term plan for nuclear waste. In the same breath, we have no real solution yet for the flowback water that's coming back that's contaminated, radioactive, and all that. I mean, we're going to store it in stainless steel casks or in open pits that supposedly have membranes that don't allow it to leak into the ground. But that's not really a long-term solution until somebody's going to come up with the revenue to build water treatment plants that can handle all that. I don't know exactly what you do. And that's my only concern. Very little of the district is in that Marcellus Shale. There's some in Pompey. Some of the farmers had lobbied me at one point about it. And I understand if they can generate some revenue doing that, it allows them to maintain their farms and continue farming. And, I understand. And I think in the end, he's probably going to allow a limited amount of fracking in near the Pennsylvania border to see how that goes. And if it goes all right, he'll probably move a little bit. But I don't think it's going to be widespread in New York like it was in Pennsylvania.
Well, the last part of your answer introduces the second part of the question I wanted to ask, which is the question of where the authority for this should lie. And, of course, the big issue here is state versus locality. So do you have a sense of the appropriate level of involvement and control of the state in deciding whether hydrofracking goes forward at a locality?
Well, I mean, New York State is one of the states that has a thing called home rule that you generally allow the local municipalities and stuff to make decisions on their own and not be forced from the top down. Legally, I don't know really what the answer to that is. Of course, according to the gas companies, the state has the ultimate decision-making power in that case. But I don't believe the governor is going to force it onto any community that really doesn't want it. And the five counties that he's identified on the Pennsylvania border say they do want it. So I think that's why he's thinking of letting it go forward there.
And let me get back to something that you mentioned before in talking about school financing. Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner has been very vocal about the financial challenges facing the city, and many proposed long-term solutions to those problems involve more service and revenue sharing between the cities and the outlying areas, even perhaps consolidation into city-based regions. And those possibilities would obviously affect your constituents in the 127th district. So what's your view of the state and the outlying towns' roles in helping cities like Syracuse to survive?
Well, first of all, I think cities like Syracuse are paramount in the economic health and vitality of the entire region. So I don't think you can just say, oh, the heck with them, that's their problem. And I think that we are going to go to a new era of consolidation. It might take a while. The consolidation that has taken so far, at this point, took a long time to do too. But I think we're entering the period when there just isn't any funding to do anything else. and we're going to see first where it's easy to go ahead and consolidate. Maybe, I don't know, there's some offices in all the towns that probably the county could do things like receiver of taxes and stuff. They do it now, so why couldn't they do it? You know, and you always, in all these towns, they have a, you know, somebody who's an officer and they have two or three staff and, you know, it costs money to do it that way. And I think there needs to be a lot more workers and a lot less officers.
Well, let me get to the three questions at the end. First, what's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
I would say it's continued community involvement. I mean, since I lost the election, I've all of a sudden joined about four or five boards and done some other things, continued to do my annual blood drive, been very connected with the community, trying to understand how the people feel and the things they think are really important.
Second, what's your worst trait?
I'm told by someone in my house I'm very stubborn. You know, I usually am a very easygoing guy, at least that's what everybody tells me. But once you get me to a point where I think it's a fundamental issue, I'm not moving. And some people have found that out.
Last, what professional or creative achievement in your life so far has surprised you the most?
Well, it'd have to be for running for public office at all. I mean, I was so incredibly shy, and nobody believes me now, but I was so shy when I was growing up that I never spoke to anybody who didn't speak to me first, ever. I worked in my father's restaurant my whole life, and I was more comfortable with adults than I was other kids. And I remember going to Notre Dame for my first visit before I got in there, and my uncle wanted to go into the cafeteria to eat something. And I walked in there, and there were about 800 guys, and there's murals all over the ceiling. And I came from a town that had 2,500 people, so this was like as big as my town, and I just turned around. I said, I'm not hungry, and I left. So being able to sort of get out of my comfort zone and put myself out there, that's been the biggest surprise to me, and I think everybody who knows me back in Clyde.
That was Al Sterpy. Al, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Grant. It's a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.